This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott.
The American economy.
Climate change without.
Hacking.
Different religions in it.
Sustainability.
Social media.
Security. Freedom.
Technology.
Marriage.
Essentially ethics.
Privacy.
We're beginning this new year with Rethink 2014, conversations and stories that challenge our assumptions and habits and ways of doing things. We're kicking off Rethink 2014 with Fred Pierce, environment consultant for New Scientist magazine. He's also written extensively about corporate greenwashing for The Guardian. His article, How Beer Money Helps Save a Nation's Water Supply, appeared in Conservation magazine. It's an example of a global conglomerate upending the business-as-usual model of pursuing profits, no matter the environmental or human costs. In this case, helping to protect an essential natural resource for its own manufacturing and for the people of Colombia. Fred Pierce, great to have you back on Word of Mouth.
Hi, pleasure to be with you.
Dig into this story, Beer Money Saving a Nation's Water Supply. Who are the players in this story?
The big player in this is SAB Miller, the brewing company, big global brewing giant. You'll no doubt have drunk their beverages at some point.
Miller High Life.
They're the monopoly brewer, pretty much, in Colombia, so they have a particularly high profile there. And like many brewing companies, especially in the developing world, they're a little bit touchy about any suggestion that they may be taking water supplies that people need for their daily drinking water needs. It doesn't look too good if you're brewing up beer at the expense of basic human water requirements. So they're quite, you know, interested in if they can do something to sustain that nature's water supplies. And it turns out that the water tower for Colombia essentially is some really ecologically very interesting areas way up in the Andean Mountains called Paramos. These are very wet areas above the tree line, but before you get to the glaciers, there are these sort of moorland areas, really quite bleak areas with lakes and very strange ecology that basically traps huge amounts of moisture. And these are the water towers for the whole country, but they're being damaged partly by climate change, but also by farmers moving up into the hills as they're short of land. So people have been talking for a while about, well, how can we persuade the farmers not to go up and destroy these great sponges, if you like, these water towers up in the mountains, so you can persuade farmers to, you can invest in better farming methods, you can just compensate farmers for not going up into the hills, just ways of protecting the water supplies for the whole nation. And conservation has been looking for people to fund this kind of thing for quite a while now, and they're suddenly discovering that brewing companies, a number of other corporations, but brewing companies especially, are terribly keen on this for the reasons that I mentioned. Brewing industries want to be seen to be on the right side of arguments about water supplies. And so suddenly SAB Miller, huge global corporation, lots of cash in the bank, is very keen on helping with this. And so far it looks like a win-win for everybody.
So brewers need water, farmers need water, the brewing companies are helping to pay the communities, the farmers, not to take away this natural resource. It sounds very different from examples we've heard in the past of, you know, sort of paying off or greasing the palms of governments in order to use natural resources. How different is this example from previous models that we've seen of corporations using natural resources in countries other in other places?
Well, I think it's an example of corporations taking the longer view. And I think we're increasingly seeing a divide in the world between corporations that are dominated by their quarterly returns and desperation to serve the short-term interests of their investors. But they're, especially among the very large corporations with the big brand images to protect, there is increasing concern, I think, about two things. First of all, about their corporate reputations, which can quite easily get badly trashed these days. You can damage a brand very easily, within a few hours sometimes on, you know, social networks and so on. But they're also thinking about the long-term security of their supply of raw materials. So if the river runs dry coming out of that water tower, that is bad for communities, but it's also bad for SAB Miller or any other brewing company if they don't have secure water supplies to run their brewing plant. And you could say the same about companies that are using agricultural resources or companies that are using timber out of rainforests. And some executives in these corporations, especially perhaps a younger generation of executives brought up with concern about environmental issues, are beginning to think the long term. And I don't want to be sort of think that all our problems are over and corporations are the good guys anymore. Most of them still aren't. But I do think there's something for, if you like, progressives and environmentalists to work with here. There are people who, you know, do want to do the right thing and they need a little bit of encouragement along the way.
How much is this costing the SAB Miller Brewing Company, do you estimate?
They're spending a few million dollars. I mean, it's not much money so far as they're concerned. Even within their Colombian operations, it's not a big deal for them. It's just, especially if you're, as they are in this case, more or less a monopoly brewer, you know, he's passing straight on to their customers, I'm sure. But it is a matter of a strategic choice that they're making to think about these long-term things, and I think it's something to be encouraged.
But the cynic might say this is not great corporate citizenship, but it is a conglomerate securing its supply chain. It's a calculation, right?
Oh, absolutely. And it's nothing else. And to be perfectly honest, we should expect nothing else. Let's be clear about this. Corporations exist in law and in statute in order to maximize the return for their investors. They would be outside the law if they were doing anything else, because that's what they're set up to do. That's what they're supposed to do. So, yes, they're self-interested. Let's assume that. But the question is whether they interpret that self-interest in a way which can reconcile itself with society's wider needs or whether they come into conflict with wider society's needs. You know, corporate risk, reputational risk, is quite a big issue now. And even the finance houses, even the people who have no direct interest in the business but are just moving their money around the world to invest in different corporations, even they are beginning to see that, well, you ought to be investing in corporations that care about their corporate reputation. Otherwise, you're investing in basically dodgy stock that might come apart of the seam, stock that's not going to have a lasting value.
Can you give us other examples of where this kind of public-private partnership is working in other countries?
Yeah, I can give you examples of where people, I should say there's probably more people talking the talk than walking the walk so far. There are a lot of corporations that are discussing these issues and not perhaps as much action on the ground as you would like to see. But I've been talking, for instance, to Unilever, one of the very largest food corporations in the world. You know, their stuff is in half the homes on the planet, whether it's soap or foodstuffs or ice creams or all sorts of stuff they produce. Their chief executive, a guy called Paul Polman, a Dutchman, is talking very much about this. He says, look, I've got to secure my resources for the long term, and corporations can only exist in the modern world if they see themselves as sort of decent citizens. So he's set targets for reducing his environmental footprint on the planet. He still wants to increase the size of his corporation, but he thinks he can halve its environmental footprint. And he talks about improving the livelihoods of the hundreds of thousands of smallholder farmers that provide him with coffee and tomatoes and many other of the raw materials for his business. So he talks about that. The Nestle Corporation, again in Europe, talks about that. Palm oil producers, palm oil consumers, having just in the last few months been signing up to no deforestation pledges. They say they're going to end not just destroying forests themselves, but also to make sure that they don't buy products from suppliers who do the same thing. So they're going to audit their supply chain. And they're doing this, as I say, partly because they're worried, in fact, to a considerable extent in this case, because they're worried about NGOs like Greenpeace and Global Witness, that we shouldn't get hold of the idea that corporations are necessarily going to do this out of the goodness of their heart. Hmm. They're going to do this because they see it as being in their corporate interest to do it. Yeah. It won't get us all the way to doing all the things that environmentalists want to do in the world. And I'm not saying that the corporations are the ideal way of running the planet, but given the world that we have, I think it's probably as good a place as any to start by encouraging these corporations to not just make pledges, but then to stand by them, because if they're allowed to get away with just making pledges, then that's no good to anybody.
Fred Pearce, environment consultant for New Scientist magazine, thanks for your time today.
Pleasure. Thank you.
You can read Fred's article, How Beer Money Can Help Save a Nation's Water Supply. You'll find a link at wordofmouthradio.org, as well as our previous conversation with Fred about his book, The Land Grabbers. Balancing corporate profits and environmental and social needs is one topic ripe for rethinking. What else should we be exploring in the new year? Are we applying the same old assumptions to an era of new economic and social and environmental realities? We'd love to follow your cues. Is it time to press reset on how our country educates kids, relies on technology, uses resources, considers relationships and love and families? Let us know what you'd like to rethink in 2014 on our Facebook page, Word of Mouth Radio, or on Twitter, @WordofMouth.